Happy Monday and happy Veterans Day this Monday, November 11th, 2024. This is Jump In Tucson, and I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. You know, on Mondays, we talk about Wonder, where we celebrate the good things going on at the University of Arizona, including student, you know, outcomes, projects, their what they're learning, as well as the top-tier research going on at a Research One institution and land-grant university like the University of Arizona. We also talk about the good things going on that support our students and get them all the support they need in order to be successful. So this is Veterans Day, and Veterans Day is an important day in our country because it kind of evolved from a World War I salute to all the veterans. Armistice Day is what it was initially called. And then in after World War II, it became National Veterans Day, and then now we celebrate as a federal holiday in November, a day to remember and reflect on and celebrate the contributions and sacrifices of all of our U.S. military veterans. And some have passed and from wars previous, and some are still active duty right now that are left the deployment, but they might still be doing things like National Guard or working in other ways as veterans in our communities. And so we want to honor them today and do that. And one of the great programs we have at the University of Arizona is the ROTC and VET program that happens, has been going on there for many, many years. And we have the director with us of that, Blaze Smith. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, first off, I have to ask you who your favorite teacher was at the University of Arizona when you were an undergraduate.
Well, of course it was Dr. Ed Ackerley.
I'm just teasing. I tell that I tell students I can go back and change their grade if they don't answer that correctly. But
well, you were a great teacher.
Well, thank you. So how did you get to working at the after you graduated? How did you get to working at the university? And you told this story to Bonnie and when we were talking about the Rockin' for Heroes that was yesterday, and you had provided some ROTC cadets to help with that great concert yesterday. But how did you get to the university and become the director of Veterans and ROTC program?
Right. Yeah, thank you. So I started at the university in 2018 after I transitioned out of the United States Navy.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we had a really great time. We were part of the 6th Fleet Area of Operations, the Mediterranean, which is cordially named the Sangria Fleet, if that tells you anything. Mm-hmm. And after getting out of the military, I came back home to Tucson, where I got my undergraduate degree in business administration from Eller.
Mm-hmm. That's where I met you, right?
Right, exactly. And I would not have made it through my undergraduate degree without the Veterans Education and Transition Services program at the University of Arizona. They helped me get through some very challenging times in my life, helped me transition from a military individual back to a civilian, and reacquaint myself with university life, which, to be honest, I thought was going to be a little easier than it ended up being.
Right.
And from there, I found a deep passion for education and continued to get a master's degree, which again, that's helped me navigate the process and achieve that goal of mine as well. And I went back in to the Vet Center after my master's program was done to go visit with my old boss, Bruce Grissom, who was the director. And I said, hey, I couldn't have done this without you. I really appreciate it. And he said, you've always loved working here. You've always been a big part of this program. I want you to know I'm retiring. And if you're willing, you should definitely put in a put your hat or ticket in the hat. And it was instant and immediate. I was so thrilled to get this opportunity to continue to do some of the most important work that we do at the university, in my opinion.
Right. So you get to work with the VETS program and that transition, but you've also picked up now to overseeing the ROTC program for the Dean of Students. And what is a Reserve Officer Training Corps? What is ROTC and what are these young people doing? I see them every Wednesday in my classes. They come dressed up in their uniforms and it's kind of really a privilege to have them in my classes. They're all very fine young men and women that come through my classes and are part of this program. But what is the ROTC program, the ROTC program?
Yeah, Yeah, sure. Great question. So ROTC is actually a pretty big part of the University of Arizona's history. It's been around since the late 1800s, and it has served as a base for training many of the United States Armed Forces officers. Mm-hmm. Throughout the entirety of all of the branches. They spend their days learning a traditional education. They spend their mornings exercising and preparing for military culture and lifestyle.
5 a.m. sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sometimes yes. 4 a.m. depending
That's right.
on the day, right?
And I have had the privilege of joining them once or twice for their morning PT sessions.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they are living a double life as a student and a up-and-coming military leader.
Yeah. I just have to, again, reiterate the ones that I have had in my classes over the last 35 years always tend to be very respectful, very attuned to their like, similar to the athletes. You know, the athletes have to turn in their homework and be participants and show up and so forth, or they don't get to stay on the team. Well, the ROTC students are very similar to that. They just are so dedicated, and, you know, they've been up for 6 hours by the time they get to class and they're wiped out, but they still come and they're just always respectful, and have just enjoyed so much having them in our business classes at the Elder College. And then VETS, which stands for Veterans Education Transition Service.
Yes, sir.
That is really important, because taking those that have been deployed and bringing them back, similar to what you did, is really an important service that the university provides.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a success story of the program, as we talked about, and we have helped and continue to help many veterans transition. Some of these service members are coming from very challenging places and very challenging times, and we are a real cornerstone in helping them move into a successful educational career and a career thereafter as well.
This is great. These are wonderful programs. We're talking with Blaze Smith. He's the University of Arizona Director of the VETS, the Veterans Education Transition Service, and the ROTC program, the Reserve Officer Training Corps. And these are two really fine services and organizations, if you will, that are at the University of Arizona that he oversees. And it's a great way for our university to support those that dedicate their lives and their careers to being in the military. And you have all five branches, right? You have
that's correct.
You have the ROTC program has Air Force, Army, Marines,
Navy, and Space Force.
And the Space Force was the new one, right?
Yes.
So that's there as well. So, and you support those young people that are in those things. When we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit more about on this Veterans Day, why these programs are so important at the University of Arizona. We'll talk about a great accolade that you got from Military Times, and we'll talk about how people can get involved to help support. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI Radio, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this wonderful Veterans Day commemoration of a great service to our country and what we can do at the University of Arizona to support our veterans, but also support the young people that are going into the military service. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm Dr. Ed Ackerley, and happy Veterans Day. Thank you to all of our veterans who have served our country over these many years and who are continuing to shine a light on our freedom and how wonderful it is to live in America. With us is the director of the VETS and ROTC programs at the University of Arizona, Blaze Smith. Good morning again, Blaze.
Good morning, Ed. Thank you.
So you have a really, really important role, because how many students at the University of Arizona are part of your programs?
Yes, we have over 6,000 military-connected students at the University of Arizona, roughly 10%.
When you think about that, that's a pretty amazing statistic, that 10% of the students are affiliated in some way with either being in the ROTC program or being a veteran who had served our country and is back for some transitional learning, right?
Right. And not only that, but also dependents and their spouses as well. So.
Right, right. Which always, you know, as they say, a person doesn't join the military, the family joins the military.
That's right.
You know,
that's
and
right.
then especially if you're going to move around, the family is uprooted and moves to different deployments and so forth. So what services do you provide in the VETS Center, the Veterans Education Transition Service, and also in the Reserve Officer Training Corps? What are kinds of services are you guys providing to students?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the VETS Center, we have a program that's built for the students, by the students, which is the most important part. Our VA work studies, which are usually veterans or individuals using their GI Bill benefits, build the programming, help support the students, interact with other transitioning veterans after their successful transition. Most importantly, we offer free coffee and printing, which to a college student is a very valuable asset.
I tried to get into your building, the ROTC building the other day. Bill and I were there and we were going to stop in and see you. And, you know, I had to be fingerprinted and handcuffed before I could get in there. I was trying to get some of that free coffee and I didn't get any, to be honest with you.
Well, we have another space at the Student Union Memorial Center,
right.
And we're on the fourth floor up there, and we will have some free coffee for you next time you come in.
Great.
No fingerprinting services.
There you go. I love it. I was surprised that the building was locked down, and then as it should be.
I mean,
it's a military facility, so yeah. it's pretty amazing. So some wonderful people are working over there. So you provide these services, and then so... A young person who's in the ROTC program, then they need, as you say, they're going to need a little bit more than just free coffee and a free, you know, things you give. You give them some serious support in their quest for becoming an officer in the military.
Absolutely. I mean, through the program itself, we have some very experienced commanding officers from around the military who have toured for 10, 20, and up to 30 years in the service. And they are training these young ROTC cadets and midshipmen to become exemplary military leaders.
That's great.
And it is a very impressive program.
And they come out of the ROTC program. They're an official officer, right? They come out as
Absolutely.
An officer.
Yeah, they commission at the end of their
They've done their 4 years of education, got their degree, and then they're on their way to some just a couple of years, and some a lifetime of working in a career in the military. Some go in for just a short period of time, 4 to 6, 8 years maybe, and some go in for 20 and 30 years, depending on who they are, right?
Right.
That's great. Well, we had some accolades here recently. The Military Times gave you a couple of pretty cool recognitions, so why don't you tell us about those?
Sure, yeah. We're very happy to announce that the Military Times Best for Vets survey has moved us from number 6 to number 4 overall in the nation.
Amazing.
For students, or programs Best for Vets.
Congratulations to you. That's a lot of that is attributable to you, so that's great. So.
Thank you very much. Yes, we're also number 2 in the West, which is very impressive as well.
Yeah. And, you know, you said that part of your deal is that students help design some of these programs, too, for the ROTC kids. And that's an important part of it, of their involvement. And they take pride in what they're providing to each other and to themselves. And that's cool. So this is pretty cool that the Military Times gives you says that the University of Arizona is at the top of our game in providing services
right.
to vets and young people joining the military.
Yes, we're very proud of it. It's a very impressive accolade.
Yeah.
And we take it very seriously. We really do everything we can to support our veterans coming out of the service, dependents, family members, and our individuals going into the service as well as new commanders and officers.
Right. You know, one of the things I do is I help the U of A marching band and have since 1984 raise money for their uniforms and for their meals and all the things, even some travel and so forth. And everyone thinks that because they're affiliated with athletics and with the University of Arizona that the, you know, the money's falling out of trees on them and so forth. But the reality is they really have to play for their food and they work really hard at fundraising. They do get support from administration and from athletics, obviously, but we do an awful lot of fundraising to support them. And people would think, well, you know, the band, they should just get some money and we should just go for it. Well, that's not how it works. And that's similar with the ROTC and the vets program as well. Although it's an official role at the university and does have funding, and of course you're employed by the University of Arizona, so there's an HR component there. But you're always looking for support, and you could use some donor support, right, to help these vets transition and help the young people.
Yes, thank you very much. It's very important for us to continue student engagement activities, like events, taking them to places that will help them develop as military leaders or transition out of the military into successful college students matriculating and then graduating through the university.
I just wanted to mention those 7 cadets that were yesterday at the concert. The Heroes Concert. Oh my goodness gracious! What a great testament to the ROTC program.
So. Yes, absolutely. They are really exemplary cadets. I'm so proud of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit. Tell us a little bit about what your future is with the Vets and ROTC program. What are you looking forward to do? We're obviously continuing your good work and be acknowledged nationwide. But if people support you and give you some support, what are you going to do with that support and money?
Yeah, absolutely. We're just going to continue to support students however they need us. Our philosophy at Vets and ROTC is to engage, educate, empower, and employ. And we use that philosophy in every aspect of what we do at the university. So helping them, find them where they are, give them the help they need, empower them to make good decisions and become successful students, and then help facilitate employment thereafter as however possible.
And that's really an important component too, especially for a vet who has gone through military and then transitioned into education and taken a four-year degree and really worked hard at it. Now they need a job, and we got to find them a place to land. And so you help them land somewhere that suits their experience, but also honors their military service.
Yes, we have a lot of really great partners around the community, like Arizona At Work and Pima County One Stop.
Great. How would a person donate to you or to support you or call you and say, hey, I don't know what I can do, but maybe you can send a veteran my way. Maybe we can get him a job, or I'd like to give you some financial support. How do they do that?
Sure. They can visit us online at vets.arizona.edu, and they can find out tons about our program from there. And if they put a /give at the end of vets.arizona.edu, they'll find a donation page where they can donate to Vets or any of the four ROTC components at the university.
So if you're a military person yourself who's a veteran and you've hit on good times and you've got a little bit of pocket change left over and you want to support some young people who maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago, you were one of those young people, go online and make a small donation and see if you can help a student who's working on their own military career. You know how important it was to you when you were going through it. So maybe you could help one or two people as you were enjoying your retirement from the military and maybe even from the workforce. You might have a penny or two to share. That would be a good thing, right?
Yes, absolutely. We would really appreciate it. We're very grateful.
And we also need some people to step up and help vets get some jobs. So, and I know you work with the other agencies in town to make that happen, but certainly someone could call you directly and say, hey, I got four spots. I'm looking for veterans. See if you can find some people to match, and you would help be able to get them connected, right?
Absolutely. My contact information is on the website, but just in case, you can also call us at 520-626-8380.
That's great. So this is Blaze Smith. He is the University of Arizona Director of Vets and ROTC. He is providing a wonderful service to about 6,000 students at the university who are affiliated with the military. They've either served their time and are now transitioning to education and becoming a student, academic goals in mind, or they're a young person who is going through the Reserve Officer Training Corps and wanting to be an officer in one of the five branches of the government of the military and become an officer, which is a cool thing for them to do, and especially if they go to the Navy, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's funny that we have such a robust Navy program here in Tucson when we have a closest ocean is 4 hours away or 6 hours away in San Diego. So it's funny, but we do have a robust Navy program. Well, Blaze, we really thank you for your service to vets. We thank you for your personal service to our country on this Veterans Day. It's great to have you representing all the veterans at the University of Arizona, but also throughout our community who do good work every single day. We appreciate what you're doing for the young people who are trying to become officers in one of the branches of service. And so thank you. And we want you back to come and talk to us about some more initiatives that you have.
Oh, I'd be happy to. Thank you so much for your support. And thank you again for having me. I really appreciate
it. You're great. And thanks for yesterday. Your guys did a great job at the concert. We really appreciate it. Well, you're listening to KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk station. And this is the Wonder Series, celebrating the good things at the University of Arizona. And it's where we talk about the good programs like the Vets program and the ROTC program, servicing over 6,000 students, veterans, and young people who are just beginning their military careers. What a great service to our community, and nothing better to talk about on Veterans Day than what we can do to support veterans and the young people coming in and celebrate their support that, and you can help by jumping in and doing something. So thank you again, Blake. We'll see you soon.
Thank
and
you.
You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI, and we'll be back after the break to talk a little bit more about some exciting things at the University of Arizona. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Wonder Series, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. And I'm Dr. Ed Ackerley, your host. With me this morning is Teresa Crimmin. She's an associate professor of phonology and a director of the USA National Phonology Network. And welcome to Jump in Tucson.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about something you did that my brother Bill and I saw. You were a great presenter at the TEDx event at Homecoming at the University of Arizona, Desert Oasis. But before we get there, let's talk a little bit about you and what's your educational journey? How did you become a phonologist?
It wasn't something that I set out to do. It was really more serendipitous. So I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Ohio and Michigan primarily, and just really enjoyed being outside. And it became pretty apparent early on in my life that I wanted to do something related to the environment. I think because of camping trips with my family, and we progressively took longer and farther field trips out west became our favorite place to go. And so I'll fast forward to when my husband and I decided we wanted to apply for PhD programs. I was pretty dead set on, let's take this opportunity to move out west.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were fortunate enough to find funding here at the University of Arizona. Right. And so moved out here to Tucson. And then, you know, things unfold.
Yeah.
Long story short, he got a job here at the University of Arizona. So we ended up staying here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stumbled into phonology when the USA National Phonology Network was established at the university. And then have been working with that organization pretty much since it was established.
Right. Is your husband still at the U of A?
He is. He's in the Department of Environmental Sciences.
Okay.
And he is a climate extension specialist.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, we've had them on talking on Jump in Tucson about some projects. Lad Keith and those guys and all those
yes,
wonderful researchers. That's fantastic. So what is your responsibility then? We're going to talk about phonology here in a second, but what's your responsibility as an associate professor, but also as the director of the USA National Phonology Network?
So as an associate professor, I do most of the professory things. I teach a class and I work with students in a variety of contexts, both undergraduate and graduates.
My standard joke, and I've been at Eller for 35 years, my standard joke is when people say to me, well, what do you teach? And I always say, students.
Yes. I have a 100 level global sustainability class that I'm teaching right now. But then what I really love doing is hands-on research.
Right.
So I also help work with undergraduates in hands-on independent study and discovery.
Right.
But then, yeah, the lion's share of my job is in coordinating and directing the USA National Phonology Network, which is a national scale organization that is tasked with tracking when stuff happens seasonally in plants and animals, and engaging folks both in documenting what they see happening, and then also in using those data to understand better how things are changing and to support decision making and all sorts of other applications.
I'm looking at the word phonology right now, and some might think that it starts with an F, but it starts with a PH, like one of those phenomena that starts with a PH. So what is your definition, or what is the standard definition of phonology? P-H-E-N-O-L-O-G-Y, phonology. What is the definition of
that? I'll start out with what it's not, which is phrenology. That's something that it gets confused with a lot. That's the pseudoscience of feeling the bumps on skulls to try to identify people's likelihood of criminal activity.
Right.
That's bunk. Phonology actually has been around at least as long, but it is the study of when stuff happens seasonally in plants and animals and things. So it's things like when different species are putting on their leaves or their flowers in the spring, or when migratory birds are arriving or leaving, when eggs in different animals hatch, when things go in and out of hibernation. And so much of that activity is shaped by local conditions, things like temperature and how long the days are and how cold it's been, whether there's been a freeze recently. And so it's a really good indicator, basically, of what recent conditions have been like.
Right. So we're talking with Dr. Teresa Crimmins. She's Associate Professor of Phenology and Director of the USA National Phenology Network at the University of Arizona. And so this phenology thing then, as a little kid, noticing how outdoors kind of drew your attention, and now as you're a teacher, a professor, and studying phenology, kind of an interesting view of the world, isn't it?
Yeah. I find myself, I would say, kind of lapsing back into that childhood wonder, honestly, because I myself spend a lot of time looking carefully at the plants and the animals in my yard, and I'm kind of constantly amazed with what I see and the things I discover and how much joy that brings me, truthfully.
I have a little personal story. I got my doctorate, and I was doing it. I won't say that I was at NAU, but I was up at NAU getting my doctorate, and I was there for the summer, and I was there every day. I had made a deal with a hotel that I would do some mystery shopping for them and help them with their promotions, so they let me stay in their hotel, and they were right by a forest, and I would pull in, I'd jump out of my car, I'd run into the hotel, and then I'd do my thing, and then I'd jump back in the car and go to school, and I did that all summer long. My youngest son at the time was probably about 6 or 7, and he came, and from the time, it took him about an hour to get from the car to the door of the hotel, because he was exploring that little forest. I mean, it was a huge forest, but he was just exploring this little patch of forest, and he brought me the perfect rock, and he brought me a walking stick and all sorts of cool things, and his older brothers were out there with him, and they were just blown away by the nature that, because they lived in Tucson, is to uh-huh. see the forest for the first time. And so it is amazing when you stop and take a look yeah. at what you can see.
It's so good. It feeds our souls, you know? It's so good.
Yeah. Nature and nurture, right? And it really, really helps us yeah. Get centered in our lives.
And that's one, I feel like that's one of my kind of continual messages, is that invitation to just take a moment, especially when you're feeling overwhelmed. And there's mm-hmm. there's lots to feel overwhelmed about right now.
Amen.
And even just looking at the tree that's in the median in the parking lot outside your office space can bring you a moment of respite.
Right.
And, you know, and you might be surprised too what you see if you do pause and really allow yourself to focus and look, really look, even yeah. for just 30 seconds.
Yeah, and we take so much of that for granted because it is around us all the time. With sometimes we just walk right by it and don't even notice it, kind of like I did in the forest. Walked by it and never even took the time to notice anything. And here, a little guy can see just about everything there, and it's amazing.
Kids are great like that. There's this concept of plant blindness. Or just nature blindness, really, which is the label for what you just described, where, you know, we're among living things, but we don't really see them. And refocusing our eyes so that we do see them can bring us a lot of good, honestly.
And there's probably a lot that can be learned from studying how and when animals, you know, or when eggs are hatched, or when flowers bloom, or when leaves fall off trees, and so forth. This seasonality that we again take for granted in our community, and in our world, that's probably important research that's going on in that field to kind of understand the world we live in.
Yes, it is, because what's happening right now is we're in a period of really rapid change, mm-hmm. As temperatures are warming. Globally, temperatures are definitely warming, but the rate of change is not consistent around the globe. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of other types of changes, you know, with precipitation and increased droughts and larger storms. All of those things are impacting when things are happening, but in different species, but they're not being affected in exactly the same ways. And so the consequences of those differential changes is that species that typically used to interact are maybe not interacting mm-hmm. as much. You know, things like plants and pollinators that
and
depend
bees,
on one
yeah,
another's
right.
are maybe not active at the same time so much anymore. And that can have significant consequence, not just for those species, but also for things that we care about economically, too.
Right. We're talking with Dr. Teresa Crimmins, director of the USA National Phenology Network at the University of Arizona. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about phenology and about your great presentation that you gave, Observing the Outer World to Change Our Inner One, that you gave at the TEDx event at the University of Arizona. This is KVOI 1030 AM The Voice, and you're listening to Jump in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm Dr. Ed Ackerley, the host, and we come to you on Mondays with the continuing stories of wonder at the University of Arizona. With us this morning is Dr. Teresa Crimmins. She is a phenologist. She's an associate professor of phenology and a director of the USA National Phenology Network at the University of Arizona. And so phenology, that P-H-E-N-O-L-O-G-Y, phenology, is that study of how seasonal climate conditions and other things have plants and animals react with one another and with our world. And so you get a chance to look at how things change, and that's pretty important with our seasons and what we do.
Yeah, yes, definitely. Yeah, as conditions are changing, we're seeing direct responses in when things are happening. And one of the clearest changes we see, and I think a lot of us actually register this, is that when there's a very warm winter and spring, things happen earlier. We definitely see, it's very apparent, especially in other parts of our country, where there's a clear winter and the trees drop all their leaves and everything pretty much goes dormant. When we have much earlier warmth than we have in the past, we clearly see the response where the trees start budding out and
cherry blossoms in February instead of April, right?
Exactly.
In Washington, yeah.
Yeah, it's very visible when that happens. It's also a problem because things like cherries are very frost sensitive. And so if they open their blooms and then are hit with a frost, that can kill those buds, those flower buds. And if they don't grow new flowers, the flower buds are set the previous fall. And so if the flowers are frost killed, then there are no new flowers. And if there are not flowers, then that means there are not fruits.
Right.
And so in some recent years where we've had those very early warm periods followed by freezing events, we've had some devastating losses in crops like cherries and peaches and others.
Citrus, in Florida and places like that. We don't normally get some frost, but then it comes at late in the season. And and we work with the wineries down in Sonoyta Elgin area, and they've been hit a couple of times with a late frost after they've had some warming, and it kind of does some havoc on their vines.
Yeah. It definitely can, yeah. And we're, unfortunately, with rapid changes, things aren't linear. The changes aren't linear, and so it's rather erratic.
Right.
And yes, that can lead to some messy consequences.
So we're talking with Dr. Teresa Crimmins, Associate Professor of Phenology and the Director of the USA National Phenology Network. You were selected to present at the TEDx Desert Oasis event at Homecoming at the University of Arizona, and you gave a presentation, which, by the way, was outstanding.
Thank you.
It was called Observing the Outer World to Change Our Inner One, and talking about climate change. But you talked about it in such a way that made it personal to people and how they could help and assist researchers like yourself in coming up with some solutions to what some of our problems are. So you could share a couple things. One, you have to apply to be a TEDx presenter. So what motivated you to say, I think I want to give this a shot and go become a TEDx presenter?
I'm always up for a challenge. That's
right.
True. But I really feel passionate about what I do. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, I really find a lot of joy. I really, truly find peace and joy. And I feel restored when I literally just step out in my little yard here in this middle of Tucson and look carefully at the critters that I encounter, the plants and the birds and the bugs and that kind of thing. And I want to bring that to others. I want to bring that invitation to others so that they too might, rediscover that simple, it's such a simple way to kind of feel better. And then, once you're kind of in that right frame of mind, the information that you have the opportunity to document when you are carefully looking at what you're seeing is information that then can be transferred into the kind of information that scientists like myself can use to document and better understand how things are changing, how plants and animals are responding to these rapidly warming temperatures and more chaotic weather right. conditions that we are experiencing.
When you were talking on the stage at the TEDx event, I was kind of equating to what you were saying to amateur weathermen who and women who count rainfall at their house, or they they have the temperature gauge at their house, and they report that into the TV station or whatever to kind of say, well, you know, that, you know, in Tucson it's 69 degrees, and in East Tucson it's 67 degrees, and you know, we had half an inch of rain. That's coming a lot of times from contributors who are kind of unofficial helpers in this
yes.
program. So that's kind of what I was equating what you were saying to, is if you take the time to go out and look in your own space, record that and get in touch with you and say, here's what I've seen.
You're absolutely right. So both you might be thinking of the National Weather Service Co-op Observer program. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a select few, because by and large, right. those folks are becoming of an age that they are no longer able to actually document those data. But there's been a proliferation in recent decades of programs that are referred to either as citizen science or community right. science, or even just volunteer science, where, yes, folks with an interest but not necessarily formal training or official background in an area can help collect information and contribute it through a program that generate data. And there are some fantastic weather ones. COCORAS is one All that right. comes to mind. It stands for Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also one called Rainlog locally here in Arizona, where you can document right. those weather reports. And then the platform that my organization runs is called Nature's Notebook. And
right.
that, you're absolutely right, is parallel in that, rather than asking folks to document the temperature and
right.
the rainfall at their site, we're asking them, tell us what you see happening on that tree in your yard, or did you happen to see any hummingbirds in your yard today? If so,
right.
what were they doing? I have this broad-tailed hummingbird that for 4 years now has come back to my backyard and built her nest on a string of Christmas lights that's mm-hmm. hung up in my back, just on my back porch. And I love it. Every year I get to watch her build that nest. And then she lays eggs and she fledges them, and it's the coolest thing. It's
yeah.
so fascinating to watch. And so I have been reporting that in Nature's Notebook, because that will be information that can be accessed in the future to be able to understand, you know, is the timing of when those hummingbirds are active shifting? Is it being affected by, say, temperatures or other factors? And hopefully we will be able to document that conditions are improving for hummingbirds,
right.
but
right.
remains to be seen.
How would an individual then, obviously they would download an app, but can they interact with your group at the university and get some guidance and so forth, especially if someone's apprehensive about downloading an app and not really knowing exactly what you're asking them to do? Can they get in touch with you and
absolutely
and observe their outer world to change our inner one?
How would they get
in touch with you guys?
So sure. So my team, we sit at the University of Arizona. Our website is usanpn.org. And all of our staff emails are listed on the website. We have right. loads of information on there that explain how to get started with observing in Nature's Notebook. You can also download the Nature's Notebook app in either
right.
the Google Play or iPhone, iTunes stores.
That's kind of intuitive. It kind of walks you through it of what you need to do, but you might need a little guidance, right?
Marginally. You know, it's funny. Our apps, I will just be really upfront, they are rather dated,
right.
but I am so excited to share that we have a large grant from the National Science Foundation to dramatically improve them, and we have that work actively underway.
Great.
And so it's going to get better.
Well, we thank you for your work, and we hope some people will jump into the phenology observations and help you all. Thank you for coming in today, and thank you for joining us on Jump in Tucson.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Great. If you'd like to be on Jump in Tucson, go to jumpintucson.com. Jump in Tucson broadcasts from the Bustos Media Studios at KVOI, 1030 AM radio. We appreciate Teresa for being here today, and all of our guests from the University of Arizona on our Monday Wonder Series. And we thank you for listening, and we hope that you will jump in Tucson.